Well, now to our very first guest in our special mini-series, The Final Shift. One day, James Nixon was flying Ansett planes all over Australia. The next, he's stranded in Cairns when Ansett Mark 1 has collapsed in the most dramatic and, as we'll hear, chaotic fashion. James Nixon now, like so many former Ansett pilots, has gone across the world for work, and he's joining us this morning from Vietnam. James, good morning.
Good morning, Julie. How are you?
I'm really well. Now, I know it's dreadfully early in Vietnam, in Ho Chi Minh City, so we've got a little wake-up call for you. Strolling through the crowd like Pete DeLore contemplating a crime. She comes out of the sun in a silk dress, running like a watercolor in the rain. Don't bother asking for explanation, she'll just tell you that she came the year of the cat. Yes, the year of the cat, Al Stewart, and with me our pilot, James Nixon. Now, James, you love that song, don't you?
I sure do. It's one of my favourites.
Can you repeat the words for us?
Well, I can, because I've just learnt them. On a morning from a Bogart movie, in a country where they turn back time, you go strolling through the crowd like Peter Lorre contemplating a crime. Isn't that fantastic?
It is fantastic. And Kerry Jean Ross, our Life Matters music selector, has given you that as a present to say thank you for coming on the program. We're talking about, I guess, the final shift in this sort of special week of times of great change and things finishing. Can you take us back to the day just before you were stranded in Cairns, September 12th, 2001? Was that a normal day in the cockpit?
It was very abnormal for a few very important reasons. The overarching reason was it was the aftermath of September the 11th. So the world was in absolute shock. We can all tell each other where we were when we saw it happen or we heard it happen. I was fully aware that Ansett was going to the wall 6 months beforehand. I'd been flying with one of my Texan colleagues who had been with Braniff when it failed twice in America, a huge airline, twice the size of Ansett. And he said to me, as we were taxiing out one day after being very badly handled on the ground, he said, look, this is just ridiculous. This is exactly like Braniff was 6 months before it went under. People just didn't care about getting the plane out on time, and everything was going wrong. And so I took that as a warning, and I refinanced my car, and I paid off my credit cards, and 6 months later, sure enough, Ansett was in diabolical straits. I was applying for a job on overseas in England, and the people had asked me to send my updated resume. And I was sitting on in Melbourne on a night time watching the Channel 7 footy show and filling in an email form, and suddenly they went to a news break, and it was September the 11th, and we got to see that live over the next few hours. And, of course, going to work the day after that, to Adelaide and back, and then eventually going on a three-day trip that was going to take me to Adelaide for an overnight and then Cairns for an overnight. After September the 11th, it was just absolute mayhem. Friends of ours were flying overseas and we didn't know where they were. We couldn't speak to our friends in the USA. And so it was an amazing time. And at that stage, the airline was also disintegrating as well.
James, you were on the tarmac in your plane at Brisbane, and something happened there that made you think, what's the, you know, uh-oh.
Oh, this is unbelievable. We were going to Cairns, to Townsville and back before we went to Cairns. So the afternoon flight, we'd gone from Adelaide to Brisbane, Brisbane to Townsville and back, and then up to Cairns for the overnight. We were sitting there, and the catering guys came along and decided to take off the catering. And I thought, this is a bit weird. We're about to take off, and the passengers are boarding now. And they said, nope, you haven't paid your bill, and we're taking the catering. And I thought, you've got to be kidding. So it ended up with a bit of a tussle with me on one end of a catering trolley and this guy on the other end.
Look, I do a fair bit of flying, and I want you to fight for my tucker at a moment like that.
That's right. Anyway, we were not too sure about the weight and balance of the aeroplane, because if they took the catering trolley and the equipment off, it would add to the, or decrease the weight of the aeroplane towards the front of the aircraft. So we had to check and make sure that that was legal for them to take that off, which they did. And my parting words were, well, I hope you guys go broke before us. And they did. They went broke about 2 hours later. We then took our flight to Townsville with no food on for our passengers, just a few bottles of water. And we went and bought some food in the terminal ourselves for the passengers for the Townsville to Brisbane flight. And on the turnaround before I went to Cairns that night, I went up to the newsagent to buy clinkers, because I've always been buying clinkers for the flight attendants.
Now, remind us what a clinker is.
It's a Pascal lolly made in Australia, and it's a fantastic chocolate-coated lolly that every ANSET flight attendant will remember. So I used to buy these at the newsagents at the airport, and I went up there in between those flights to buy a packet of clinkers for the girls, and this young guy came up and was running the shop, and I was buying the clinkers, and he said, "What's going to happen?" I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, I've just started here. This is my first job, and what's going to happen with ANSET?" And I said, "Well, we'll probably go broke." And he said, "Well, what's that going to mean?" And I said, "Well, that means you'll be out of a job tomorrow or the next day." And he just looked at me as if I was crazy, because he said, "But I just got this job." It was his first job. And he just didn't have any idea of the ramifications of an airline like ANSET and how many... people and employers and in various support companies. So we then got in our plane, Captain Al Clark and myself. We flew up to Cairns for the overnight and put the plane to bed. We sat around in the bar with the flight attendants out the front of the Hilton there beside the river, contemplating what was going to happen and drinking lots of gin and tonics and thinking about the future and whether it was going to fail or not. And by this stage, the first administrators had come in. Then we all retired to bed, expecting to go out the following afternoon. And we turned the TV on, and the administrators were on the TV on Kerry O'Brien's late line. No, Kerry O'Brien's 7:30 report. And they were saying, "There's no problem, the airline will fly over the weekend, everything's okay." So we went to bed thinking that'll be fantastic.
Now, what happened when you woke up?
At 6:45, I got woken up on the telephone by my friend in Channel 7, Melbourne, who said, "Can we come and do an interview?" I said, "Well, you can feel free, but I'm in Cairns." And he said, "Well, you know, the airline's failed." And I said, "Oh, it couldn't possibly fail. I went to bed late last night and the administrator said it's going to go." And he said, no, the airline's grounded. It's finished." And at that point, I looked out the window of the Hilton, and here was my airplane, Hotel Yankee Delta, taking off over the city of Cairns. I said, "Of course it's not failed. I'm watching my airplane take off." And he said, no, what airplane's that? Because they've all been grounded." And it turns out that the administrators had decided that they wanted that airplane back in Brisbane. And so they had cancelled the flights, but they'd got the crew who'd signed on that morning to fly it down to Brisbane, and effectively stranding us in Cairns.
James Nixon is my guest on Lifeboaters this morning. This is the first of a special mini-series this week, The Final Shift, and he's discussing the moment that ANSET collapsed and the unfolding drama for everybody involved. So you're stranded in Cairns. I gather all the muddled-up ANSET staff go to the airport sort of in an instinctive way. What scene do you see there?
Well, it took a bit to get us there. Captain Al Clark and myself... we had a history. I'd been a photojournalist on both HMAS Melbourne in 1980, and Al Clark had been a Skyhawk pilot. And by chance, I'd taken a photo of him in his jet on HMAS Melbourne all those years ago, and here we were flying together. So we decided we'd go for a walk along the beachfront and think about things. So we're doing this power walk right up the beachfront to Cairns. We come back to the city, and we find our flight attendants all sitting at a breakfast cafe and contemplating what was going to happen. So we sat down with them and we decided, well, this calls for a bottle of champagne. So we had a champagne breakfast with the 737 crew and the A320 crew in the street at Cairns. We then found out that there was one aeroplane going to fly around Australia picking up broken down ANSET staff. It was a plane that had flown into Perth, had not been cleaned or looked after, and the administrators wanted it back in Melbourne. So they were going to allow it to fly from Perth to Adelaide, to Sydney, to Brisbane and then down to Melbourne, picking up decrepit ANZIIF staff around the nation. Our chief pilot rang me and said, now listen, you guys have to get to Brisbane this afternoon. The plane will be landing at 8 p.m. and if you're not on it, you won't be able to get home.
You make it sound like Vietnam falling, but can I just take you to the airport and describe the very distressed woman at the airport?
Oh, this is horrible. Cairns Airport was full of crazy people, you know, people who are just absolutely devastated. A lot of ANZIIF staff, a lot of passengers. And in the middle of this group of passengers, there's this one woman who's just walking around in a daze. And our flight attendants very carefully found her, sat her down and said, what's wrong, what's wrong? Turns out her brother was in the World Trade Center. And I think she had been speaking to him beforehand, but I'm not too sure, but she hadn't heard from him since. And of course, all lines into New York City were closed anyway. So she was just terrified. And so they sat her down. And we had very little chance of getting down to Brisbane, but one of the airplanes was a Fokker 100 for a subsidiary company of ANZIIF called Flight West, and the administrators decided they wanted that airplane down in Brisbane. So two pilots were going to ferry that plane to Brisbane, and so we were trying to suggest that we should get out ourselves on that airplane as well and get ourselves to Brisbane. And they said, well, no, the Civil Aviation Authority requires, if we're going to open that flight, it must have flight attendants who are trained on the doors of that particular airplane type. And, of course, our crew were A320 and 737 crew and weren't trained on the Fokker 100. So some of the girls from Flight West who lived in Cairns decided that they would put on their uniforms and come back to work and work for us to bring that plane down to Brisbane and allow that woman to become a passenger and take her to Brisbane where she could go off to the World Trade Center to see if her brother was still alive.
James Nixon, I mean, you hear there the sort of extraordinary professional care of airline staff, but at a moment when, as airline staff, you yourselves can't have felt very cared for. Our time is nearly up, but I gather you do manage to get on a plane back to Brisbane. Was that woman who needed to find out what had happened to her brother in the Twin Towers, was she on the plane too?
She was sitting right behind me. She stared straight ahead and didn't move for the whole flight. And it was an amazing day. And on my website, I've written a story about the subsequent trip home and how we got back to Melbourne. And it was an amazing day and one that will remain in my memory forever.
Would you describe it as the most intense that period of your life?
Yes, probably the most intense. It's just shock lurching from one thing to another. So it's disbelief, total disbelief. And the sad part was that you felt guilty, extremely guilty for feeling bad for yourself because of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon attacks.
Yes.
You know, we had, it was very hard to feel bad for yourself when there was such a greater horror that had happened to the world.
Mm. James Nixon, thank you very much. I, of course, we've heard a lot about ANZIIF, but I think you've brought it home in very dramatic human terms, just how miserable it was. And thanks for joining us from Ho Chi Minh City. You couldn't give us a few more words from Year of the Cat. We might give you a serenade, you're back to work.
It's about a man who's stranded because after he meets this girl in this place and goes and spends the night with her, when the morning comes and you're still with her and the bus and the tourists are gone and you've thrown away the choice and you've lost your ticket, so you have to stay on.
James Nixon, thank you very much. And we'll put connections on our Life Matters website to James Nixon, the pilot's website. You're listening to Life Matters. My name's Julie McCrossan. This is ABC Radio National. And on the last shift tomorrow, we'll meet Sydney's very last lamplighter.
One morning comes and you're still with her. And the bus and the tourists are gone. And you've thrown away your choice and lost your ticket. So you have to stay on. But the drumbeat strains of the night remain and the rhythm of the newborn day. You know, sometime you're bound to leave her, but for now you're gonna stay in the year of the cat.